You've found the weekly podcast from radiotoday.co.uk, and we're back at Jazz FM this week with another roundtable. On the agenda, BBC Local Radio 50, Global's new app, a few interesting recommendations for your listening pleasure, and much more. Stu Clarkson's got some news, and David Lloyd's here as well, but first, let's meet the panel.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, innovative solutions for creative radio people.
Hello, I'm Steve Parkinson, the National MD for Bauer Radio.
I'm Paul Chandler. I'm a consultant and I'm also a non-executive director of Fix Radio, which is the new station for builders and tradespeople.
And last time I saw you, we were at Fix Radio.
We were
is
in
it
our
still
little.
Still thriving.
It is more than thriving, and also you met us in our little studio, which had all the brickwork on the wall, which I know you were impressed with, weren't you?
Much taken by that. Very yes. Good. Okay, let's start with the Ray Jars. Last week's Ray Jars. Good news, largely for you, I think, Steve.
Yes, largely great news. In fact, I think quarter two was we found it a bit odd. I was putting it down to the four or five T's, in, which were sort of you know, all terrible actually, but sort of terrorism and Grenfell Tower and what Theresa May was up to, and we had a bit of a talk back at the glorious One Golden Square about what we thought went on in Q2, which felt like a short term sort of extra froth of audience going to the LBCs and Radio 4s, particularly in the morning, wanting to know that the world was still turning. But I think Q3 seemed to bounce back, you know, the other way. Certainly great numbers for Absolute, you know, Kiss, sort of biggest number ever with Kistry and so on. So I think DAB really helping grow the choice of not just stations,
so
but also
really
listening.
So you're really noticing the DAB effect?
Yeah, I think particularly at Bauer, we've got quite a lot of DAB, and actually the extensions seem to be you know, really helping the master brands this time, as it did for Global. You know, Heart 80s having a great second book. So I think it was just showing that DAB is really helping add choice to the dial, or EPG, I suppose should be the
Paul,
word.
The big headline, and we would have expected it, wouldn't we, was Grimmy down to lowest ever Radio 1 breakfast, all the rest of it. Is it time they did something about that?
Well, I think they are doing something about it, and I suspect in one way Ben Cooper, who runs Radio 1, is probably fairly pleased with that in a silly sense, because what they're trying to do is to make that audience much more focused and lose some of the older listeners that have traditionally given it a high reach. So in a perverted way, I suppose they might well be looking at those figures and thinking that they're actually not bad. But of course, Radio 2 does exceptionally well. As always, and Radio 4, brilliant, you know.
How do you make of it from, you know, sitting at One Golden Square, looking, Steve, at Radio 1 and 2, how do you assess their performance?
I agree with Paul, actually. I think Ben and the team are doing a good job of defining both Radio 1 and One Extra, actually. Radio 2 is the runaway juggernaut that it is, and in a way, Radio 2's remit, any research we've done, the music is very important, but actually it's personality that are the key drivers to Radio 2, whereas I think with One and One Extra, it's much more about the music and personalities.
And the big bugbear for me, and I know everyone always says it in commercial radio, but look, they've got massive budgets, they've got cross-promotion on television, they've got no commercials, and they've got lots of talkability. And so, you know, if you gave me that kind of criteria, I'll probably be able to deliver some of that audience.
Yeah.
But of course, back to Radio 1, what Ben would say, and he's absolutely right, is a lot of their reach and engagement is coming from YouTube and the videos that they put out there. And so it's not just about radio, it's about the whole brand and trying to reach that key.
Is Ofcom going to change any of this? Is the new rules that they're going to impose or suggest they may be going to impose on Radio 1 and 2?
I don't know. I don't know what they're saying about Radio 2, especially with its news output and how that's going to be interpreted, because they want to see more news put into daytime radio, whether that means more Vine or more stuff, longer bulletins. I can't quite understand how that's going to be interpreted, but I think the jury's out, really. But it's all in the nature of trying to streamline and compartmentalise those services so that they don't necessarily interfere, overlap with commercial radio offerings.
So I think we're agreeing, you know, Ben does a good job, and at the same time of him really defining One and One Extra, I think you have to say Kiss and Capital and Kerrang and Radio X, the other you know, younger brands from a commercial point of view, actually have all had great radars, and that audience has to come from somewhere. So I think as Ben is doing his job as defining correctly where BBC Radio should be, actually the commercial sector in that younger under 30 sort of brand or under 35 brand, actually they're all doing well as well. So it's a good time for all of radio.
Let me move on, if I may, to local radio. We've been talking about the BBC. It wasn't very long ago that Radio 1 had its 50th birthday. It's the 50th birthday of BBC local radio this week. In fact, tomorrow, as we're recording this. What do we think of the state of BBC local radio? Is it in any way a threat, a competitor to what you guys do?
I heard a fantastically crafted, put-together documentary that went out on BBC local radio called Friendly Radio on Sunday at noon, which went out on all 40 BBC local radio stations, produced by some young Turk called Trevor Dan and voiced by David Lloyd. And it was a great programme. I'm not flattering you. It was a great program. Brought back memories for me because Radio Brighton in the early days, they used to do time checks in the 24-hour clock, and I remember that. And I used to, that's distinctive, and then Bob Gunnell talking about it, Radio Brighton virtually invented the snow line in the 70s when the coast road was blocked and they went on air 2 months early because they could broadcast emergency information. So brilliant. That kind of BBC local radio, great. But I think what came over in that program and also has existed for some time is very much the attitude of, hello, here are we in our ivory tower talking down to you in your little home. The sort of rather condescending BBC local radio way, which has generally disappeared. There is some element of it there. And when I was lucky enough to be a judge in the Gillard Awards this year, and I know you both have been in the past, but some of the quality production on BBC local radio in isolation is fantastic. The documentaries, some of the presenters, the interviewing, very creative, beautifully produced. The problem, I think, is the lack of consistency. And almost, I find when I listen to it, the lack of radio basics. You know, the teasing, the trailing, the identing, the stuff that is audience building just doesn't seem to be there all the time.
Are you suggesting that they need a top broadcasting consultant to help them out?
Far be it from me to suggest that, but, you know, that's a great idea, Trevor.
Other consultants are available.
I'll put my number out at the end of this.
Steve.
So I'm not a big BBC local radio listener. It's just not in my sort of natural portfolio of listening. And also with all the other work-related listening I've got to do, it's sort of quite a small part of my listening. So this morning I promised that I would do some prep ahead of today. So I sort of listened in at 5:45 to have a listen around, see what was going on. And it was interesting. Radio London, which I do enjoy, and I think, again, to a consistency point of view, you've got Simon Lederman, who I met through the radio festival this year, and he's a fantastic broadcaster and storyteller, and I hadn't really realised his experience and so on until I met him at the radio festival. So I've got him sort of on a BBC pedestal of just a great broadcaster that he should be doing more. And then this morning, Petrie Hoskin was presenting, who I remember from LBC, great broadcaster, but some of the callers were sort of, and I'm going to tell you another thing sort of content, and she didn't have the spark that she actually has and has had at LBC. So I think they were talking about, you know, what happens when Oxford Street gets pedestrianised, and they were going into great detail about, well, you'd go north at this junction and the buses will go around here. And I thought, God, poor woman, you know, where's she going to go with this? Mm. Whereas actually, if you listen to LBC, that is a great station that I really enjoy listening to. It feels like LBC's Piers Morgan radio, in that you never know what's going to happen next on LBC, whereas BBC London, Vanessa's great, Simon's great, but depending on the content that's coming in depends on what the output's going to be, so it is inconsistent.
Don't you think one of their problems has always been that being a BBC operation means they strive for impartiality? And so when somebody comes on and says something totally outrageous, they kind of have to say, yes, well, that's an interesting point of view, Ian.
Well, bear in mind that BBC local radio now is within the news department of the BBC. So it is very journalistically...
Big issue, I think.
led. And there was the famous case of Ian Lee, who did the 3CR, BBC 3CR breakfast show, who got hauled over the coals for criticising and commenting on something a guest said about homosexuality. And he was, I believe he left shortly afterwards, but that was in some ways a little unfair because, like, if he'd been on a commercial station saying that on a late-night phone-in show such as he does at the moment on talk radio, then he wouldn't have had that reaction. But because it was within the BBC breakfast show, local radio, under the news, it had to be impartial.
Steve, just go back to what I said a minute or two ago. Do you, as a commercial radio manager, pay any attention to them? When you look at a market, a town or a county, do you look at what percentage of BBC local radio listening there is and think, I could go and get a bit of that?
I think the good thing about local BBC and, say, the Bower City Network that have local stations in you know, a lot of the towns and cities where the BBC is, they are both there for complementary reasons. As part of my prep, I had a quick look at Radar on the last one to look at how Reach did in literally random areas. So I'm literally going to pluck three out of 10 or 11 that I found. So fourth one in Edinburgh has got 380,000 listeners. BBC Radio Scotland in that same TSA have 214,000, so pretty good. Again, in Sheffield, there's Hallam with 354,000. BBC Radio Sheffield, just over 200,000. And Radio Ulster does very well with 560,000. Downtown 288. So actually, there is absolutely a room. You know, there's sizable audiences in those cities. And I think so. There is a place. We do look at how they're doing locally, particularly in those local markets. But I think I was reading Radio Today over the weekend, and they had the story about the presenter who went to Filey to give out cakes as part of Radio York. And I sort of read it and I thought, oh, is that a bit twee? But actually, they were highlighting loneliness. So for that audience, it's absolutely bang on. It's what Radio York should be talking about. So I thought that stood out as a good story. Also, Radio Oxford, that I hear a bit more because I sometimes spend weekends there. Actually, they're a fantastic BBC radio that champions localness, and there's some spirit that's there in BBC Oxford that comes out in the traffic and travel, it comes out in the breakfast show, and somehow they've really encapsulated that area. And I'm not sure what that is, but you can just tell that they have a real sense of purpose, which I think is the important thing.
And the other thing is that I think there's been a fairly recent influx into BBC local radio of some commercial radio people, and I think they have started to put various things in place which do lead it to be worth listening to and enjoyable. And, you know, I'm a reasonable fan of BBC Low Grade, but I listen from time to time, and when I listen, sometimes I despair, but most of the time I enjoy it.
Paul Chandler and Steve Parkinson are with me. It's the Radio Today Roundtable. We're live again at Jazz FM, and it's a very big moment now because, ladies and gentlemen, we have a new advert.
Hey, I'm Josh Collins.
I'm Chris.
I'm Mark Gale.
Hi, I'm Amber Stone.
Hi, I'm Stephen Daly.
I'm Sarah Hughes.
Hi, I'm Matt Shields.
I'm James Martin.
Hello, I'm Graham Torrington, and we're all available for your station today via voicetrackerhub.com.
Need a last-minute show covered? Or have a regular weekend show going?
CHR.
Hot AC.
Gold.
We've got you covered with top-class talent from around the world.
Search according to formats and budget and contact presenters directly.
Find your remote radio talent today.
VoiceTrackerHub.com.
Ooh, that was good, wasn't it?
That was so good, Trevor.
Very nice.
We all enjoyed that.
I don't think they're called adverts, are they, in your world? Aren't they called spots?
Spots, commercials, ads, money-making moments.
Anyway, revenue came in, so that was good news for us all. talking of which, on the pod last week, I was talking to Mark Barber about radio advertising, and we were making the point that we kind of expected it wasn't going to be so healthy as it is. Why is it going up, Steve?
Well, I think Mark spoke about the fact that radio revenues were sort of riding high at the moment, and he talked about some of the reasons for that. And so I think this year particularly, airtime as a revenue stream has done, you know, particularly well overall, and actually branded content's been a little bit more challenging. So we've all had to raise our game, certainly at Bower, to make sure that every penny that a client's going to invest really has the value and the creativity that they're seeking. So, you know, a lot of clients will be using it alongside TV or cinema, so they've got that visualization of it. So certainly at Bower this year, we've seen branded content, you know, whether it's Wick on Absolute Breakfast or Universal Studios that are sponsoring Ronan and Harriet at the moment, they're wanting those extra special moments. So we've become almost mini agencies thinking, OK, this is the radio moment. Here's the OB. Here's how it lives on social. Here's the event that we're going to do in a theatre. So more and more, it's become a real 360-degree offering that I think a radio station's got to present.
I think it's fantastic that Steve and his team and Global, the big branded radio stations and groups, and are attracting other brands to advertise, and that's been a long battle, but they're winning it, and we're seeing some fantastic brands coming into those branded radio stations. What I think is interesting is that I think alongside that, say Heart, for example, I think because of all of the branded commercials and content on Heart, which are networked and also some local, some of the local advertisers that have traditionally advertised on a station like Heart, say in South Wales or something like that, may be slightly disenfranchised and are now looking to place their money elsewhere, A, because it's quite expensive to advertise on Heart, comparatively speaking, and also the airtime is limited. So they may well go to Nation Radio or Swansea Bay Radio and advertise there. And I think the other thing that's going to be happening, I don't know whether Steve agrees with this, that over the next 5 years, we're going to see community radio get increasingly more sophisticated in the way that it makes money. And I know from doing some training with them on the editorial side, on the commercial side, they are now starting to get their act together. It's not going to happen quickly, but I do think that there's going to be, you know, if we're sitting here in 5 years' time, community radio will be making much more of a revenue impact on the sector.
I agree. I think it's all about lifting the standard, whether you're CFM in Carlisle with a very small, perfectly formed team, or Nation, or Celador, or Jack FM. You know, there's some amazing creativity. It's not about, I think, the number of people there. I think it's the attitude of the station. And I think community taking some of that revenue, we'll all be upping our game, and there's going to be a place for everybody.
And also, alongside community radio, I've got to do this, the niche stations, such as Fix Radio, which are appealing to a specific target audience and who are attracting advertiser who may not have been advertising on radio before and cannot afford the Magics or Hearts or Kisses or Capitals of this world, but who nevertheless wants to use radio, and we can persuade them to use radio to reach that target audience. So there's very little wastage, and I believe that stations like Fix Radio and Encore Radio, which is UKRD's station, and Chris Country and Fun Kids, they all have a place in that ecosystem, which is all, and you know, led by DAB availability, which is leading to the greater good, which is more companies, brands, advertisers spending on commercial radio.
Right, talking about brand extension, help me understand why Global have launched their new Global app.
Well, you'll have to ask Global for that. I mean, I suppose they have a great portfolio of brands, and I think in a way the platform is actually quite simple, but the packaging is very nice. So if you want to put in really what are box sets or streaming services and put them under partying or relaxation or holidays, or actually they've done it very well. It's to grab some of that streaming market. So they've got radio and streaming in what I think is a very clean, clear app.
That noise you can hear, by the way, is Paul
Chandler having a look at it
using his smartphone to find the Global app.
I downloaded it at the weekend, and I've been playing with it.
What do you make of it?
I love it. It's nice. It's obviously a couple of interesting things. First of all, it's beautifully built, very nicely illustrated. I'm going to turn my phone off.
I think you should.
And of course, I put it off, put it in airplane mode, and I turned it on to launch the app, and now all the messages are coming through. It's beautifully built. It's very smooth to use. It's beautifully illustrated. I love as Steve described them, the box sets, that, you know, music to party to. If you like XFM music but you want to work out to that music, there's a section for that. But it's just music plus branding. I also think that this is obviously Global's attempt to move people to its own walled garden, away from Radio Player and iTunes Radio.
It's a bit like an Apple push, yeah, isn't it?
It is.
Come into the walled garden that is Apple.
But isn't it also interesting how Global have started using the Global brand in a much more public-facing way now? There's this as the latest example. Obviously, Leicester Square is branded as Global London. And I think it started about a year or so ago when they started saying, from Global's newsroom on the news. Is that going to happen with it from Bauer's newsroom on the Bauer stations, I wonder, Steve?
There are no plans at the moment to have news teams from Bauer. But I think you can see the strategy start to emerge now, which I think is a good strategy. I think, you know, being objective, I just find the Global World word is a bit sort of spectre-like for a set of UK stations. The app is great. You know, they have a great number of products on it, and I think it's a smooth, pardon the pun, structure. They're not scraping content from lots of other sources. It feels a nice experience. I do like the BBC radio wheel on the radio iPlayer,
yes,
and they've sort of got the feeling of that, but it is, you know, you can swipe from Gold to Radio X to LBC quite easily, and it all worked, you know, very well yesterday.
And people do criticize Global, don't they, and have done over the years, but actually, to be honest, I quite admire what Ashley, as Richard and Stephen have done in terms of creating what I call this shiny floor radio, like shiny floor television. You know, when you go to their studio, sense there's loads of video, there's loads of screens around, and it's all. And let's face it, their target audience, it isn't necessarily the 18 to 24 capital listener, or the 25-34 heart listener. It is the 22-year-old Soho media buyer that they're targeting. That is their one and only target. Because they're trying to bring this revenue in, and those people need to be excited, and they need to understand how the thing works. My only criticism with Bauer, and I know they do a great job, but sometimes I get confused about the big city stations and so on. And I was always a big advocate of, I think I wrote a column about it 10 years ago, saying keep the local branded names, keep Invicta, keep that. I think in retrospect that was wrong, and I think what Heart have done and Capital and Global have done with those brands has been the right thing. But I don't know whether we're going to see any of that in the future in other parts of the industry.
I'm
sure it's been discussed many times.
I'm equally sure you're not going to tell us.
I think the last time, Graham Bryce should be here to answer this one, who runs the Bauer City network. But I think the last time that we looked at it, because those services are in large towns and cities where they're normally number one or number two, the feedback from listeners and from the local market was, why would you take away a name like Clyde or Metro or Radio City that's absolutely ingrained in those communities?
I get that.
And I think we've recently announced that probably with the Bauer City 3, that probably went a step too far. So that's becoming the hits again. But I think I think back to our local radio sort of focus, I think there is an importance still on remembering where you are proud to broadcast to and from. So Aberdeen, where I'm from, I grew up with North Sound and BBC Aberdeen and so on. But so there's still a place, I think, for those
names. The heritage
names
is very important.
Yeah, and complementary to what Global's doing.
Steve Parkinson and Paul Chandler are with me. It's the Radio Today Roundtable. And we'll pause for another commercial message, and then we'll find out what our guests have been listening to.
Visual radio, smarter and cheaper. Virtual director from Broadcast Bionics combines your social media, messaging, photos, audio and videos with intelligent camera control and automated graphics. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk.
Well, you're probably, Steve, going to talk about Magic Christmas, I'm guessing. It's November the 7th.
I know, and it's always nice to come in and talk about another brand, and I've been very kind of neutral in my sort of narrative so far. I mean, Magic Christmas did launch on Monday, and I'm not going to talk too much about that, but I kind of love Christmas, and there was a story on Friday, the engineers sort of were pottering around with the new service, which Rachel Devine and Sheena Mason has lovingly put together back at Magic. And quality songs, you know, there's quite a big, you know, mix in there. So it's not just your shopping mall kind of mix. So I think they're very excited about it. But over the weekend, the engineers let the link go out sort of by mistake onto a few places. And within an hour, we could tell that there were 16 people somewhere in the country who got it. And we're listening over the weekend.
Santa and the elves.
Yeah, exactly. So, but that's fun. I mean, I think the important thing for Magic, it's been a big year this year. And I think I was going to talk more about Ronan and Harriet and not, you know, not because it's just one of my brands. But I think it's been a truly exciting new thing for Magic to have a big breakfast show, but also to get somebody like Ronan over to Magic. I think he sort of follows in the footsteps of Kim Wilde and Rick Astley, and there's something about having a music heritage star on Magic that's actually pretty down to earth. He's a lovely guy,
and he's a good broadcaster as well.
He's a good broadcaster, and you know, you normally think, well, we'll give them 3 to 6 months to find the chemistry. Harriet, who's a wonderful, warm, friendly, award-winning broadcaster that I worked with at Heart years ago, and she's had her training at BBC London. She's at the top of her game, and I think bringing in the great broadcaster with Ronan, who's got loads of stories and is not scared of having the fun taken out of, you know, we're, you know, genuinely excited about how they've come together since September the 4th.
Here's a flip.
Okay, it's National Cappuccino Day.
Yay!
Yes, go and have one.
Go down to Ground Coffee Society in Putney and have your cappuccino.
Here, it's very nice there.
Yes, very nice. Do you have bad internet? Well, it could be your Wi-Fi rather than the connection. Large groups of people, right? These are the things that can block it.
Okay,
so large groups of people, mirrors, Christmas lights, even fancy fish tanks have been found to interfere with your signal.
Wow.
Just get rid of all your furniture. Those people who live in minimalist houses have the best Wi-Fi.
Okay, so there you know.
There you are.
What are scientists up to? Every day we get stories of them up to no good. Today's a good one. Sheep,
up to no good.
Sheep can recognise the face of famous people when trained.
Yeah.
They particularly like Barack Obama and Fiona Bruce.
Yeah.
There you go.
I had a sheep come up to me the other day.
Uh-huh.
In a field. I don't know what I was doing.
A sheep, wow, where are you going?
A sheep came right up to me.
Yeah, and says, I remember you.
No, sheep don't talk.
Good one. Yeah, thank you. She got the joke. You.
Sheep don't talk, you two.
Okay.
Have you heard Sam and Amy on Virgin?
I have heard a little bit of them, and actually, I mean, they are great broadcasters. You know, they were great on Gem, and I think they will take Virgin in a new direction. So I have to, you know, Francis Curry is a great programmer, and I think it just feels more cohesive already with what he's doing with the music and also the kind of personalities that he's giving to Virgin. I think Edith was fantastic, but I think Sam and Amy feel like a new generation for Virgin.
It's interesting, though, that that Virgin had a good book in the Rajar, didn't they? They had a very good
book. That's the law of Rajar.
Which is not necessarily the thing you want to do if you're Mike Cass and you've just gone in there, I guess. Poor Mike is seeing, well, you know, I've made these changes. Have I done the right thing? But I think he has. I think Sam and Amy, great broadcasters. And
So, Paul, what should we be listening to?
Well, I spend a lot of my professional life, most of my professional life, listening to music stations. So for me, it's a pleasure to listen to speech stations. Steve mentioned LBC earlier, which I love, and I love Nick Ferrari. I've become a fairly recent convert to BBC Five Live. And I'm not a sports person, as you know, even though I ran sport for a while. I'm not a sports person, so I don't realise. But what I do love is Five Live Drive with Tony Livesey and Anna Foster. I just love that programme. They have all the ingredients that a commercial radio music show would have, except they do speech. You know, they're fun, not necessarily funny, they're fun. They have an incredible chemistry. They have great light and shade. They can deal with very serious subjects and then move on to something light. Tony Livesey, I've got great respect for him, a newspaper journalist who's come to radio, and he is a great interviewer and also brings... Both of them bring their life to the radio, and I think giving nuggets of their personal lives on air just makes them much more of a personality. So I love that.
Later in the programme, before 5 o'clock, we'll talk etiquette, particularly because Donald Trump is on a tour of Asia at the moment. He arrived in Japan. He was offered sushi, which he turned down in favour of a well-done hamburger instead. Some people have said that's not really the way to treat a host. There's a whole list of the top 10 faux pas when you are What's the right word? I was going to say mingling. Mingling sounds very formal. You're mingling with people, like keeping your shoes on in the house, being on your phone all the way through lunch. Apparently asking for the Wi-Fi code is considered bad form, which I'd never realised
before. Well, of course it is, because you're obviously saying I've got better things to do than talk to you. I'm going to play whatever game on my phone.
Oh, we won't do that again then.
We went to my mate's 50th. He'd spent a good 6 months doing his back garden up for the event.
Yeah.
And then as we arrived, all my mates just went to put their beers in his ornamental fountain. That's a breach of etiquette. So
the other programme that I like is on at the same time, because it's on Radio 4, and it's the PM programme with the wonderful Eddie Mayer.
Genius.
And who's got a book out at the moment, so plug. But Eddie Mayer is a genius. And what I love about Eddie is, some people find him a bit stuffy and, but I love the way he interviews politicians. Real forensic interviewing, taking apart someone's argument, and he's got this ability to ask this killer short question that, Jim Nocte on the Today programme would ask these long, rambling questions. Well, Eddie's the opposite. He does ask, but very short questions that put politicians on the spot.
Again, I ask you about Theresa May's judgment in appointing and keeping Boris Johnson as Foreign Secretary.
It is up to the Prime Minister who she appoints and keeps.
Why doesn't she sack him?
As I say, it is up to the Prime Minister.
And I'm asking about her judgment. When she appointed him, she knew that he'd published a poem about the Turkish president having sex with a goat. She knew he described President Obama as part Kenyan. She knew he referred to Papua New Guinea-style orgies of cannibalism and chief killing. She knew he talked about tribal warriors in Congo breaking out in watermelon smiles. And she knew he said Liverpool had failed to acknowledge the role what he called drunken fans played in the Hillsborough disaster. I suggest to you the reason Theresa May doesn't sack him is because she fears a leadership challenge. She's prepared to send Boris Johnson out to represent the United Kingdom around the world in order to protect her own job.
Well, those are your views, Eddie, but
I'm suggesting it to you. What do you think?
You can, and I think that Boris Johnson does a great job.
It's interesting what you say about personality, because Eddie Mayer is a personality presenter, isn't he? Even though he's in an impartial news environment on the BBC.
Absolutely. And I saw his... I don't know if you saw it. He appeared on TV on Sunday on Robert Peston's programme.
Very funny.
And to plug the book, and of course Peston, in his usual way, was all over the place. But Eddie Mayer was very cool, very calm, was asking the questions that viewers had sent in.
Did he say to Peston, "The only thing that's wrong with your book is the words"?
It's the words. But then Peston came back and said, "Well, the words, but not necessarily the words are fine, but they're not necessarily in the right order. The Morecambe and Wise thing." But no, it was great. I greatly admire Eddie Mayer, and I would imagine that LBC have been trying to get him for years, because
probably why he's paid such an enormous amount of money by the BBC.
But he started in commercial radio on Radio Tay, I think, in Scotland. And so he's a commercial radio person. I always think of him as a commercial radio person. I don't know whether that has led him to bring that kind of personality radio to the BBC. But you're right, it is a personality show. And I miss it. I miss him being there when someone else is doing it.
He's like a conductor, isn't he? He conducts an interview, and as you say, he does that. And finally, then the next minute's a quirky something or other. It's the timing. He just knows how to use silence, how to use that flow of presenting, and it's hard to tune out of that show, actually.
And even the beginning of the show, when they open it to what the Americans on television and Saturday Night Live would call a cold open, he can... I don't know whether it's him or his editors. I'm sure it's a combination of the two. But they can build little montages of the news of the day. He can script something that is slightly different, and so I've heard him described as smug, but actually I don't think he is at all. To me, there's a lot more smugness on the BBC than Eddie Mayer, but I think he does a wonderful job. I'm a big, big fan. I can't wait to read the book.
I just wanted to have a word about a piece of Radio 4 drama that they did a couple of weeks ago to celebrate the centenary of the Russian Revolution. They dramatised John Reed's 10 Days That Shook the World. And BBC drama, well, radio drama, is not always to my taste, I have to say, but this was just brilliantly done. They did it over 10 instalments of 13 minutes. It was really, really well acted, and it's just an excellent use of the medium of sound to take you somewhere you couldn't possibly have been.
Lenin, calm, unemotional, his forehead wrinkled, chooses his words. Each sentence falls like a hammer blow.
Shame upon those who are of little faith, who hesitate, who doubt, who allow themselves to be frightened by the bourgeoisie. There is not a shadow of hesitation in the masses of Petrograd or Moscow and the rest of Russia. The civil war is not over. The enemy is still with us.
You're looking very credulous.
Well, I listened to one or two of them, and sorry, Trevor, I have to disagree. It didn't make my heart sore, and I thought it was a little bit stagey and a little bit sort of. I suppose it comes down to personal. Like, I love the Archers, and I think you know, but the Russian Revolution versus the Archers is. I've heard some fantastic dramas, especially in that afternoon play slot, and the Saturday slot that they do. But I wasn't totally transfixed about it. It was sort of like a little bit. Oh, I'm being terribly awful about it, but I didn't like it.
Let us move on to any other business as we wrap things up. Anything else you want to plug or talk about, Steve?
The only thing I was going to say is, rather than listening to drama, I've found a great podcast, Eat, Sleep, Repeat, which I don't know if you've listened to, which is Bruce Daisley, formerly of EMAP and sort of radio commercial fame. He's now I think he calls himself the Supremo of Twitter Europe. I think he's the VP of Twitter in Europe. He's done a podcast called Eat, Sleep, Repeat, and it's about culture and environment at work. So I think it's quite a popular thing right now about agile working and well-being at work and environment is important, particularly for younger people. And so he's got all sorts of people that he talks to with his wit, and then intro is a different speaker. I heard one from earlier this year, which was about Netflix. They had the head of HR from Netflix, and her basic premise was, we're all here to work with fantastic people, and if you're not getting regular grade A's, you should be out.
So. I've had a few conversations in the last week where largely people have been saying to me, oh, look, but, you know, the thing is these enlightened jobs and unenlightened jobs. And my sister was saying to me, you know, a lot of people working in a work environment where they're not allowed to use Facebook. They're only allowed to use Google for 2 hours a day. And all of the stuff that you're talking about here, Bruce, it's all very nice, but it's sort of like first world problems. It's like affluenza. It's just, you know, the luxuries of the super fortunate. And look, when we created the New Work Manifesto, myself and Soutard were thinking about those things. There's things in that manifesto, and you'll find it on the website, eatsleepworkrepeat.fm. There's things in that manifesto which are very much intended for anyone to do. You know, things like take back your lunch, things like operating a digital Sabbath at the weekend, optimizing for laughing in an office. I don't think any of those things are the reserve of those who've got a wonderful job in an enlightened company.
Well, I think that's brought us to a conclusion. Thank you very much indeed, Paul Chandler and Steve Parkinson. We'll have another roundtable in a month's time, and Nikki Birch will be on that one. And here is Stu Clarkson with the news.
Yes, thank you, Trevor. Global has put all its stations and a load of new playlist streams on a new smartphone app. The Global Player adds extra services, including Heart 70s, 90s and noughties, Capital Party, Heart Dance, Classic FM Feel Good and Smooth Relaxation, and lots more besides. Ofcom's had another 44 applications for community radio licences this week in areas where there's already a station. The list includes 5 applications for Bradford, 5 for Birmingham, 5 for Leicester, 4 for Manchester, 3 for Leeds, 2 for Glasgow and 2 for Newcastle. You can see the full list of applicants at radiotoday.co.uk. Nominees at the Student Radio Awards are getting given shows on Upload Radio. The DAB service is giving £2,500 worth of airtime to everyone shortlisted at the SRAs this year. Community Radio Award winners got a similar prize as well. Sandy Beach has been jailed in Cyprus after being found guilty of child sex abuse charges by a court there. Sandy was a presenter on stations including Atlantic 252 and the original Virgin Radio. More recently, he's been well known in the industry for producing jingles. Mark Goodyear is going back on air for the first time since his recent illness. He's presenting a series of specials on the careers of music icons that air on Absolute Radio throughout November. John Foster has left BBC Tees after 15 years with the station. Bob Fisher's doing his afternoon show instead at the moment. John has previously been on stations including TFM, Great Yorkshire Gold, Great North Radio and many others. And BBC Radio Sheffield's got a new face on the weekends. Comedian Rob Rouse, who's been in the BBC sitcom Upstart Crow, is joining the station for Sunday mid-mornings. Also, Kat Cowan takes over Sunday breakfast in addition to her show on Saturdays. And Radio Sheffield will start taking the Yorkshire Brass Band Show, which already airs on Radio Leeds and Radio York on a Sunday afternoon. And you'll find more news daily at radiotoday.co.uk.
Thank you, Stuart. Here's David.
This week sees the 50th anniversary of BBC Local Radio. Its birth is largely credited to former accomplished war correspondent Frank Gillard. Frank had heard how local radio worked in action in other countries and was keen to create it here. Michael Barton was an early local radio manager.
Frank knew he needed to do a lot of hard talking, not only outside the BBC with the politicians, but within it. Lot of resistance to local radio. Toy Town Radio, what the heck are they doing, wasting their money? And Frank set up, quite wisely, in 1963, thereabouts, a series of experiments, closed-circuit experiments, they were never broadcast. What Frank was doing, very cleverly, was setting up these small experiments for a few days at a time, recording everything that was done, and he was building up his little archive, which was going to be used in the future, to great effect, to persuade the doubters, the politicians, those with influence, that this is the way forward.
One challenge was funding the new services, given BBC cash didn't exist at the time. Local bodies were asked to pitch in the necessary £50,000, and the order of stations coming on air lent much to who put their hands in their pockets most quickly. Leicester was to come first.
This is Radio Leicester. It's 12:15 and time for the midday edition of The Leicester Scene. The man in the chair today, David Challis.
The small staff of 16 have moved into their new studios and offices at Epic House in Charles Street, and already they're having practice runs on their programmes. 8 weeks to go before this station opens. You seem to be starting these practice runs pretty early.
Well, it might seem a little early, but it's not really from our point of view. We've got an awful lot of work to do before November the 8th, the day on which we start. We've got to get used to quite a lot of new equipment, and one of the things we were trying to do in this particular run-through was to take a sample day and see how much news there was available. Could we, for instance, find enough news to fill two magazine programmes in a day, a lunchtime edition and an early evening edition? And in fact, it was marvellous. It went completely the other way. We found we had so much that we had to leave some out. I'm sure it's going to be a question of economy.
I couldn't understand your antics during the practice round. You looked more like a jack-in-the-box. Was all that jumping around really necessary?
Well, there certainly was a lot of jumping about, and I think to a certain extent this is going to be expected during these practice runs.
I think there was some sort of feeling in some quarters that it was all a bit toy town, if that's the word. And it was staffed by people who'd never worked in broadcasting at the lower levels. And that there was I won't call it resentment, a misunderstanding, I think, is probably the better word, about what it was going to achieve and how it was going to achieve it.
This is BBC Radio Leicester. Good afternoon from Radio Leicester, broadcasting on 95.05 VHF. Here is the Postmaster General, the Right Honourable Edward Short.
This is the first hometown radio station in Britain. It opens a new and, I think, exciting chapter in the story of British radio.
And what a day. We've had the Postmaster General to open the station, the Lord Mayor of Leicester's had a say, and we've got more visitors in the studio this afternoon. during the next...
There I was, a nervous young man at the controls of the radio station that was the first to go on the air in the country.
Well, I'll flash right round to my next request, which is from Julie Howard of 18 Foss Road, North Leicester.
We don't know who was listening, but for a quarter of an hour we read out local news and traffic information and stuff like that. And then we went into the World at One on BBC Radio 4 and immediately heard ourselves coming back again because it was big, major national news.
Britain's first experimental local radio station, Radio Leicester, went on the air about a quarter of an hour ago, like this. Mr. Short said the station manager, Mr. Maurice Ennals, and his staff had been given no instructions about how the station should be run. They knew that their job was to provide bright and attractive local programmes. The Lord Mayor of Leicester, Alderman Sir Mark Hennig, described local radio as an experiment which would have as great an impact on our society as had the BBC's national programmes. The station's first news bulletin told of a telephone call saying a bomb was timed to go off in the station at 1 o'clock, but the station is in fact still on the air.
And it's stayed on air ever since, moving premises but once. Radio Leicester had a staff of 16, with about an hour or two of needle time, opting into network when it felt like it. Outside the premises on launch day, protesters from the Free Radio Association carried placards saying, BBC monopoly equals stagnation. The Times report, well, they said, it all sounds dreadfully parochial, but maybe that was the idea. The report estimated a maximum audience of 160,000, and that figure was informed by the number of VHF sets, 60,000, now called FM, the sets that could pick it up. It was later awarded medium wave frequencies to make sure it could be more widely heard.
On 837 kHz, 358 metres medium wave, and 95.1 stereo VHF, it's Radio Leicester's Crosstalk.
Keeping the city and county on the move. It's Radio Leicester's travel news.
So Radio Leicester was on the air and other stations quickly followed. And its architect, Frank Gillard, prepared to be judged.
By this time next year, we shall be engaged in the business of evaluating, for the Postmaster General, the success that the stations have had in the period of their operation as experiments. And it's on the strength of the assessment that will be made next year that decisions will be taken whether to go ahead with a great expansion of local radio or whether to curtail the operation, perhaps even to cancel what's happened so far.
Well, of course, the trial was seen as a success and BBC funding followed and the network continued to expand. Happy 50th birthday, BBC Radio Leicester.
Thank you, David Lloyd. And by the way, if you do want to hear that programme that David and I made about the early days of BBC local radio, it's on the BBC iPlayer. In fact, it's on 40 iPlayers. Just search for Friendly Radio. That's the title. It's a quote from local radio's founding father, Frank Gillard. So I'll see you next time with news and interviews from the Rain Summit and the Gillards. I've been Trevor Down. This has been a TDC production. Thanks for listening. Ta-da.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.